Okay. I'm going to call the House or the Joint House and Senate Transportation Committee together and let the record show that we convened at about 2 minutes after one. And again, it's a privilege to meet with the Senate. Thank you very much. And I'm sure the people that are presenting are very thrilled that they only have to do this once instead of more than once. But anyway, Senator Kokesh, would you like to introduce your Senate members?
Absolutely. Thank you all for being here today. I'd like to introduce Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan, and myself, Senator Kokesh, for the members of the Senate Transportation Committee who are currently here. I'm sure we'll be joined by one more.
All righty. And let the record reflect that that the House members present are Representative Gruenberg, Representative Peterson, and Representative Feige, and I think hopefully we'll have some joining us later too, and myself, Representative Wilson. I'd like to recognize the staff today. We have Kerry Cooper Ryder from the Senate over on my right, and who is the recording secretary, and Sammy is our LIO monitor. And my community aide today is Becky Rooney, and the Senate community aide, is Nancy Barnes. And before we start, I'd like you to turn off your cell phones, all the way off, not just to vibrate, because they do interfere with our transmitting our IT system here. So we're going to continue our overviews to help us prepare to hear our bills this session. And today, we will first hear from the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, or MTAB. And then after that, we will do the Alaska Marine Highway System. And let the record reflect that Representative Munoz has joined us. And so we'd like to finish by 2:30 today because the Senate needs to reconvene. Mm-hmm. So we will try. That means we're going to try to keep things a little bit concise. And I especially looking with our Captain Flavio over there, he gave us a whole bunch, so maybe we can condense that just a little. So Mike Crosmo from MTAB is here to speak with us. Mike, please come forward and state your name and affiliation, and we will ask questions as you proceed, if that's okay.
That's fine.
All right. Continue. All right, go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, and representatives and senators here today, members of the committee. And just want to let you know, I hope this chill doesn't have anything to do with what's going to happen with the Marine Highway System. It's kind of cold in here. But anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to stand before you today and talk about the priorities of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board and the future of the Alaska Marine Highway System. My name is Mike Crosmo, and I'm a professional mariner, tugboat captain, so I have a little bit of background in the marine industry. And and I really, you know, have a deep love for the marine industry as a whole. There are several MTAB board members here today who represent the different regions within the Alaska Marine Highway System. And if you look at the roster of the MTAB board members that I've provided, you will see that they're a very diverse group of Alaskans who take the responsibility to advise the ADOTPF and the governor on improvements to our marine transportation system very seriously. And I know that for a fact as being a board member for the last several years and being the chair for the last 2 years, that they do a very good job. MTAB was established in 2003 by administrative order and put into Alaska state statute in 2008 under AS 19.65-110. We work closely with AMHS staff on short and long-term planning and as well as scheduling. We also serve as a conduit from the public to the administration. And by statute, the board may issue reports and recommendations in consultation with DOTPF and submit to the department and the governor a strategic plan, which includes the mission, core values, objectives, initiatives, and performance goals of Alaska Marine Highway System. 1 year ago, we stood before you and talked about our recommendations for the past year. As I briefly review these three short-term goals, please keep in mind that the Marine Highway staff can provide more specific details on how these goals were implemented and their successes. And we did have a very successful year last year, I thought, thanks to you guys and thanks to everybody in the administration. It was a good year for the Marine Highway System. The number one thing, a recommendation from last year, was operating the Kennecott on a full schedule from May through September. And this has been an ongoing priority for MTAB and the seven Aleutian Island communities served by AMHS, operating the Kennecott cross Gulf all summer instead of tying her up 2 weeks at a time a month. It allowed for twice a month service to these communities, and it's vital to their economic and social and educational well-being. The funding goal was accomplished last summer by AMHS with help from the administration, and now is now formally part of the three-year scheduling cycle. Because of this long requested service change, there have been some changes to how the Kennecott will operate in the next 3 years, and I'm going to let the Marine Highway staff talk about that. But there are some changes on how it's going to operate coming out of Bellingham. And we'd like to thank you for your support. The other thing that the having the Kennecott run across Gulf out of Bellingham is going to do is going to really provide another more service for our military families getting up to the interior and to the bases and stuff. And we think that's huge. They're a huge, you know, part of the system. They use the system, and it's going to relieve some of that pressure off the other boat that was running up from Bellingham. The other two, or the number two priority we had from last year, was operating the fast vehicle ferry Fairweather on a full schedule in spring. This is a very important service for Sitka. Sitka really appreciates the fast ferry. It works well going to Sitka. And for the last few years, last year we were able to get the Fairweather to operate in the spring to Sitka, but that was just because of moving some money around and it was able to operate. But it's really important to Sitka and the Northern Panhandle for their crank-up startup this summer season. There's been some issues with the fast ferries, and so this is causing, you know, problems with trying to put that implementation of that schedule into a long-term goal. And I'm going to defer again to the Marine Highway staff for those problems we're having with the fast ferries. I'm sure you're all aware of them to a certain extent. They've been extremely hard to keep these vessels operating, and this has been a greatly appreciated, I mean, the service has been greatly appreciated by the public they serve. The MTAB understands how integral these vessels are to the success of the overall system, and it's continually stressed that they need to be there for the long term. Last year, we requested money to be set aside for replacement engines, but right now, there's a bunch of things going on with the engines, and Captain Falvey will talk to that. There's some forward progress being made on maybe fixing those engines. There's also some legal discussions that are going on, and discussion on who's responsible for those engines being sort of faulty. So that's all ongoing, and I don't tend to know all the details of that. I'm not privy to all that, but it's something that we think that those areas now are integral to the system as a whole, and they become extremely important in Prince William Sound, operating to Cordova and the communities in Prince William Sound. This is still a priority for us to have the fast vehicle ferry Fairweather operating in the springtime, so we'll be pushing for that and seeing how the mechanical aspects of that vessel end up. The third goal, and it's probably going to be one of the biggest things we talk about here, is putting additional money into the vessel replacement fund so we can keep moving with the Alaska Class Ferry project. Thanks to your efforts, there's currently between $50 to $60 million in the fund, yet an additional $60 million is still needed to build the first vessel. The administration requested the additional $60 million this past year in federal funding. But as you know, the project has been defederalized, and the federal money may no longer be available for this project due to possible procurement changes in support of building the Alaska class vessel in-state. Constructing this vessel in-state will have significant economic benefits for the state, and this leads me into MTAB's work this past year. One of MTAB's most important goals is to keep the state of Alaska moving forward to build desperately needed vessels and new fuel and operationally efficient vessels. The AMHS fleet, with the exception of the Kennecott, Latoya, Fairweather, and Chinooka, are getting to the age where it is critical that we start replacing them. Every year it costs more and more money to maintain the older vessels and keep them up to date. And with the current state, federal, and contract requirements, functionally a significant portion of these maintenance costs are paid for through federal programs. But we cannot rely on this source of funding into the future, and the public cannot rely on the vessels that are regularly showing their age with schedule changing breakdowns. So it is our desire that we secure the necessary funding to build the first Alaska class ferry and annually put money in the vessel replacement fund in order for the state of Alaska to continue to replace its aging fleet. We understand that this is a significant financial commitment, but it is essential that we maintain and improve the unique marine transportation system, which is vital to the well-being of the entire state of Alaska, and it's not just its coastal communities. We had hoped that the next few AMHS vessel, the next new AMHS vessel, would be under construction at this time. However, a pause in the project may have some benefits to the state. A few years ago, well, actually last year, we were assuming that the design would be done right now. They had a date of March for the design, and we were hoping to be going into construction. Because of the changes I talked about earlier, things have changed. So in December, the board had a meeting in Ketchikan and also visited the Ketchikan Shipyard, Alaska Ship and Dry Dock. ASD recently completed the MV Susitna, a ferry destined to be operated between the municipality of Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. This project and the state's investment into Alaska Shipyard infrastructure has prompted a hard look at building a new AMHS vessel in-state. With the current project being defederalized, we believe this gives the state an opportunity to look at building vessels in-state as well as out-of-state, depending on the cost and the timing. At the Ketchikan meeting, the board had discussions with AMHS staff and ASD Shipyard Management about methods of designing and building new ferries. This resulted in an MTAB resolution recommending the state of Alaska pursue the construction management general contractor procurement method modified to suit the activity of shipbuilding, maximize the Alaska bidder preference, and continue to work towards building the Alaska class vessel as soon as prudently possible. Copy the resolutions in your packet. And benefits of building the vessel in state are numerous and positive. By building the infrastructure and training the labor force to take on such a project, the state would put itself in a position to develop a much-needed manufacturing base. This would only enhance our coastal economies and keep much of the marine build and repair business in-state. It would also give us a leg up on activities as we start looking more closely at Arctic development and shipment. The bottom line is MTAB strongly believes that we need to move forward with the Alaska Class Ferry Project this year. AMH staff needs to continue the process of design, which we believe should incorporate the GMGC procurement method. State legislature and the administration is strongly urged to finish financing this project and continue annual appropriations for further vessel replacement. If we don't act soon, make no mistake, we will be dealing with our marine transportation in a crisis mode. This has happened in Washington State in recent years. They are building new vessels to replace those that were forced out of their system due to age and deficiencies and at a much higher cost and of critical need for service.
Mike, if we can just make a little pause here, and I'd like to announce that Representative Menard has joined us, and so has Senator Menard and Representative Pruitt. Thank you. Go ahead.
The MTAP also continues to work on long-term goals for the AMHS system. We have worked with staff in developing the next three-year scheduling cycle for continued consistency and public trust. The change alone has paid off very well for users of the system, from Ketchikan to Kodiak, and I should say out to the Aleutian chain, and we recently have developed with the Kennecott going across Gulf, the Aleutian chain will now be part of that three-year scheduling cycle, which was important. We have seen an increase in ridership as a result of this three-year scheduling cycle. This was something that MTAB and Southeast Conference and a lot of us were working with the Marine Highway staff for several years on is developing a schedule that had consistency, because it was all over the map for a few years. We all know that, and people are really starting to appreciate that consistency. There's less complaining. It's a really big thing. So we've had several discussions with marketing staff and feel confident that our approach using the limited amount of funds available is the right one. It has been proven that increased marketing funding has a direct impact on ridership and revenues. And we have discussed blending local marketing efforts with system-wide marketing to maximize the exposure to the public. And we actually strongly support from MTAP any kind of efforts to increase marketing. The marketing staff from Marine Highways has done an extremely good job, and you can almost prove that it's shown an increase in revenues. They're doing a really good job with a limited amount of funding. We continue to look for efficiencies in maintenance, labor, operational costs as they continue to increase system-wide. We also have been looking at connecting transportation systems throughout the state and how they can be improved to ensure the public can take advantage of what the state has to offer. An example is we had a meeting in Cordova in September, and the board flew into Anchorage. We took the Alaska Railroad to Whittier and were there at lunchtime, and ultimately ended up in the Fast Ferry Chinega after having lunch, ended up in Cordova by 4:30. We had a meeting the next day. We're all able to, you know, have the meeting, get on our prospective flights to either Anchorage or Juneau. And we did it all in a two-day window, which is pretty amazing, considering we took about every mode of transportation that was available in the state. It was pretty neat. But that train ride to Whittier, to ferry to Cordova, was unbelievable. And just to let you know, Cordova laid out the red carpet for us, and they really appreciate their ferry system. I'll talk about that again in a little bit. Another long-term goal is looking at the impacts of the system on our coastal communities and their connection to urban distribution hubs. Because of the twice-monthly Lucian service in the proposed three-year schedule, seven communities can take advantage of Alaska business in Anchorage, Homer, and Kodiak instead of barging from Seattle. Because of the impact of regular ferry service and especially fast ferry service in Cordova, residents there are able to do most of their purchasing in Anchorage instead of having to rely on expensive barge service out of Washington State. This service has also had a huge economic impact on lodges and recreational activities in Prince William Sound. There's probably not a better example of what improved MHS service means to a region than in Prince William Sound. This was accomplished by communities, AMHS staff, and MTAP all working together. Of course, it would never have happened without your support, and it is an achievement to be proud of. MTAP, working with AMH staff, continues to work on ways to make sure the public can have input outside of the normal meeting schedules. We have launched a website that we will be updating meetings and provide the public with the newest information regarding scheduling, MTAP meetings and service changes. We'll also provide contact information for MTAP members, and you guys have the web address on the packet. Hopefully you need it there. So. But the board still has challenges with our ability to provide input on long-range planning efforts with DOT, PF, in a timely manner. While we have had an excellent working relationship with AMHS staff, the current long-range transportation planning is implemented through DOT, PF regions, several of which have marine highway components. Currently, the Southeast Transportation Plan is being finalized, and there seems to be a misunderstanding with DOT of what MTAB's role is in the process. It is our belief that when MTAB was formed in statute, it was your intention that we have a major role in advising the marine components of the plan. While we had discussions with planners at DOT, it was on an equal basis with any other organization that provided input to them through the public process and was occurring after the draft plan had been presented to the public. There has been one major improvement to the system this year, and that is that the AMHS has been allowed to bring in their own planner, which will give them a dedicated person to work strictly on AMHS issues. We believe this is a big step forward in getting AMHS projects done, and we thank you for that support on that too. Last but not least, MTAB is currently working with a new DOT commissioner, Mark Lucan, in an advisory role to help select a new deputy commissioner. This is also a statutory obligation, and we are looking at taking it very seriously. Tomorrow morning, we're having an MTAB meeting. We will be discussing with the commissioner what we believe are the attributes essential to the deputy commissioner position. We will then be having an executive session to go over the potential candidates and hopefully come out of that with a recommendation. So that's what we're doing tomorrow. As a follow-up to that, we just want to acknowledge how much the MTAB board appreciated working with Deputy Commissioner Beadle. I've heard him referred to as the poster boy for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and there certainly are a few people who could better reflect what an ideal AMHS employee was. After 30 years as an employee, Jim brought a wealth of knowledge and understanding to the position. He worked very closely with us and with Captain Falvey's guidance, the system has stabilized and improved. I hope you all get a chance to speak with Jim. You all got a chance to speak with Jim. And if you did, you had a better idea of what the complexities of operating a ferry system over vast distances with an aging fleet and with a comparatively small population base was all about. Anyway, we're going to miss Jim. He did a great job. He was easy to work with. I think he got real comfortable working with the legislators. And I don't know if you all, you know, I'm taking this aside a little bit, but if you've all ever saw Jim, you know, when he first started doing it and you got him up there in front of the stand, like, you know, I'm pretty nervous right now, but he'd get up there and he'd be shaking. And you'd think it was anger, but it was passion. We were talking about there was actually this passion for the job. It wasn't anger. It was just, and, you know, he'd start shaking but he really got comfortable with it. And we're going to miss him. It's going to be hard to replace him. The Marine Transportation Advisory Board thanks you for your support of this complex system. Like many transportation modes in Alaska, it is a huge challenge to provide safe and reliable marine transportation for our coastal communities. Economic growth and stability for the state of Alaska is one of the state's core missions and also that of AMHS. AMHS has an impressive track record for safety in delivering goods and people. Not only that, but personally, as a mariner, AMHS is often the first responder in many of our maritime accidents. I would hope that there could be some recognition of this by the legislature and the administration. Last year, we provided you with a list of recent rescues and responses performed by AMHS crews. And we do believe a special accommodation is merited for their efforts. And I didn't put that in the packet this year, but last year's packet, and I can provide that to anybody of all the stuff. There's been more since then. And I don't know how we'd go about it, but I just think that there needs to be some, you know, I know they do get recognized, but they're usually often the first people to respond to us when we're out there, especially in the wintertime, you know, flying the waters of Alaska. And they're pretty amazing.
Why don't you get us a list?
I'll get you a copy of that.
Of what the... what's happened this year, this past year.
Okay. And, they have, anyway. And thanks again for your support, the continued support of AMHS, MTAB, and the opportunity to share this update with you today. This concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have on behalf of the Transportation Advisory Board. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Don't see any. My goodness. Oh, here we go. Senator
Huggins. Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. Could you just give us an example of a couple things that you feel confident and proud of that the advisory board has contributed to the process and made a difference?
Well, working with the staff on the scheduling, that was a big one. We spent a lot of time working on the scheduling. The staff, I'm going to tell you right now, the staff works for the administration, and we know what the public brings to us, and we can take that and go to the administration, go to you guys and say, this is what people want out there. And one of that is actually getting the Kennecott to operate. And that was pushed through us, but the message got across through the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. That's what people wanted, and the Aleutian Island communities wanted. So we worked as a conduit for that. I put a whole list of things on here.
Well, that's okay. That's fine. Yeah. But that's hugely important. And so, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's one of our, one of our main things is we bring, really, a lot of times we bring what the public wants. And then right now, I could tell you that we are working hand in hand with the staff because they've done such a good job of management. I would tell you point blank that if there was things going on that as a board, because we're advisory board, thought that we're not being done very well, we'd be more like this, and they have been in the past, But right now, it's been a good working relationship, and they're managing the system really well. And so we're trying to help do that, and we're also bringing to you guys and to the administration what the public is saying and what and you see it and you hear it on your own with your own constituents, but. I listen in on every public teleconference and every scheduling I'm just going to tell you what I've been trying to do this last year and a half is take the committee meetings or the MTAB meetings to communities that have been actually not complaining the most but inputting the most and having a meeting there because they are participating and we feel it's their right to have see us face to face. So we went to Sitka, we went to Cordova. We're thinking about going Homer. We think about going to Kodiak this next summer. We'd like to go out to Dutch Harbor, but it might be a little too expensive. But we're doing that within our traveling budget, and everybody's real cognizant of that. But we're also trying to get the board to ride the system as we do it. So we rode this fast ferry. Well, the last two times it's been the fast ferry, but maybe we'll take the slower ferry to Kodiak. But that's important to the board because some of the board members are from Anchorage, the interior, and they see it's opened their eyes on how the system works. So anyway,
yeah, thank you, Madam Chairwoman,
and Representative Munoz.
Thank you to all of you that serve on the board. I really appreciate your service and your contributions. In regard to the marketing that you brought up, do you know what the budget is for marketing?
I should know that because we've talked about it quite a bit.
Sorry, yeah, I can answer that.
Well, and I just thought that there might be opportunities to work with DCCED, Division of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and the Division of Tourism, There's also a lot of talk about marketing Alaska and increasing tourism marketing dollars or sustaining tourism marketing dollars. So there could be synergies by working together to expose to a larger market.
Yeah, and I keep hearing that too. That sounds like a great idea. I know that there's been, you know, there's stuck. I mean, there's marketing. Input being put in that we have privy to some of it, some of it we don't. But we're just pushing. You know, we're thinking that they're doing a really good job, and if you see the benefits of it, and whatever we can do to help increase that, it really is paying off. You know, and they're working, like I say, I think they're working, they're doing a good job of working with what they got. So.
And then I just had one follow-up. And then I've also been contacted about the opportunity to not lose the opportunity to consider the inclusion of staterooms on the fast ferries, at least maybe a limited number to accommodate families and elderly travelers.
I'll let Captain Valley answer that, but there is some concessions being made to that, and I'll let him speak to that for that sort of situation.
Okay. Thank you very much. And did you have one little quick thing to say?
If I may,
very quick.
Senator Huggins, I just wanted to give you two other examples of what MTAP has accomplished. One being when we started, when it was reestablished, MTAP was reestablished in 2006.
Yeah, Kathy, can you state your name and lean a little bit further into
it? Sorry. I'm Kathy Romick, and I'm past chair for the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. But we started out where the letters came in daily of angry Alaskans because of service scheduling, and now it's a rarity that we get any letters at all of people not satisfied. The only thing that is crushing us is the breakdowns of the older vessels, and that needs to be addressed. And the other thing is when fuel went up so high, MTAD pushed and pushed for the fuel not to be budgeted in dollars, but to be budgeted in the amount that they use, and that made a difference too. So I just think that this board has really worked hard to make a difference and is listening to the people. And anyway, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair. Sure.
Oh, one more question here.
Okay.
Senator Egan.
Oh, not from him.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Sorry, Mike. Actually, I just had a brief comment and one little question, but I just want the folks that don't reside on the coast that this is our highway system. It's like the Denali Highway or the Richardson Highway or the Parks Highway. It's on water, but it's the same as yours. And, I just want all of you to remember that. And I just had one small question, Madam Chair. There was a new regulation from the Department of Transportation, and I don't know if you know this or not, or can answer that, but it was about handicap access. And I was just curious if the Marine High, and it was adopted in November of last year?
January 3rd.
January 3rd. Thank you, Captain. And I just wondered if the Marine Highway System was in compliance.
I'm going to defer that. I think we've had a brief discussion about it, but I'll let Captain Valdez answer
that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to take a brief at ease, but don't anybody go. That's just so that we can kind of change seats up there. And
Madam Chair, with permission, may you have an assistant?
Okay, now we can. Now you can go. Oh, maybe one.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Captain John F. Alvey, Jr. I am the general manager of the Alaska Marine Highway System. Also for the record, sitting beside me is Mr. Jesse McCarron. Jesse is the Las Colinas Highway Systems Publication Specialist. Jesse built this presentation. I wanted to be sure that the hardware and the software was going to work properly, and my presentation is fairly lengthy. I have a lot to cover. I'll move quickly, and it'll go quicker if Jesse maneuvers the machine for me. Jesse also works with our marketing department. Okay, Jesse. Today, what I'm going to talk about very quickly as I can, because we've got an hour, is a general overview of the Marine Highway System, Marine Highway System successes, challenges, and I will discuss the Alaska Class Ferry situation at the end. We always like to start with our mission statement. That's to provide safe, reliable transportation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That is, of course, in your packages. Okay, Jason. What we've done is I've got a couple plates here. The first one is regarding overview. We're going to discuss increased traffic, managing to our budget, early schedule releases with on-time departures, our progress with installing vessel satellite communication systems, fuel efficiency systems we're putting aboard, the online reservation system as we improve that, our marketing outreach, and the new service that we are starting. Well, actually, part of it we started, and the Bellingham Whittier Express run was starting in the spring. Okay, I'll also review challenges, discuss those in general, vessel operations, revenue enhancement, operating cost containment, vessel retirement, vessel replacement, midlife engine replacements, reservation system upgrade, and I will give a very general funding recap. We'll also talk about the Alaska Class Ferry. I've broken that into three sections. This administration and this governor's support of the Alaska Class Ferry, a status update, and a look forward on the Alaska Class Ferry. What I'd like to start off with, and this is kind of a busy chart here, but what I want to talk about is our passenger volume increases, broke down on, of course, displayed, and the next one we'll talk about vehicles. But this one addresses passengers, and what I would like to say is we're doing really very well, actually. The last best year that the Marine Highway System had, the biggest year, and we're almost 50 years old here now, was in 1992, and that was 420,000 passengers. That number moved around. 95 was 378,000. So what we did as an exercise here was to take the year 1999 and use as somewhat of a benchmark, okay, and during that year we had approximately 375,000 passengers. That was a very good year, and what we did was we took this red line and drew that across the top, and just to kind of show you as we go through to where we are over the last few years, the successes we've had. But what I just wanted to say, just, you know, as an exercise, so that we could be talking apples to apples here, is that, of course, in 1999, the Marine Highway System was also servicing Prince of Wales, approximately 50,000 passengers, okay? And then, of course, in 2002, those 50,000-ish passengers dropped away. So for us to look at any sort of a baseline, to talk apples to apples, i.e., the successes we've had to date, we just wanted to, show that. It there's no hidden meaning behind any of it. It's just we wanted a real apple-to-apple type situation. And what you can see, if you look across the chart, the dark yellow is the Marine Highway traffic, and the bright yellow at the top would be, estimated IFA traffic. And once again, it's just simply an exercise to show you that 2007, 8, 9, and 10, we've done pretty well. We have increased our traffic. We've basically, if we were to look at an apples-to-apples, in 9 and 10, hit all-time record highs. That's important stuff. And there's reasons for that. We've got schedules out early. We've got consistent schedules, working closely, as Mike said, with the MTAB. Our marketing, okay, and I can talk about marketing and what we have for budgets if you'd like to hold that question. But all that put together as translated to, we're moving more people. We are moving more people, and we look at that as a huge success. And it's a team effort. Tremendous staff on the ships, shoreside with me, and we're holding our own. And I think it's important to know that we've held our own in the worst recession this country's had in a long time. Okay, the hotels, that business in general has been off 12 to 18%. We drove right through that. Okay, and that's just that's that's very incredible considering the recession we've just slowly coming out of here. The next plate shows vehicle traffic. That's an even stronger example of the same thing where I baselined in 1999. IFA came in 2002, 12 to 14,000 vehicles. And as I say, no hidden meaning, just to show an apples-to-apples baseline. And what you can see is 2007 through 10, we have just blown right through that with all-time high record of carriage of vehicles. It's incredible, and we're really proud of that. And once again, same reasons. The ships are, for the most part, running pretty well. We had a very, very good summer. We had really no breakdowns last summer. We've had a couple of problems here over the last few weeks, but we had a good summer. When we don't have breakdowns, the system thrives because breakdowns hurt us. They cost us money. They cost us ridership. And I just wanted to say that we're doing okay. We're carrying a lot of people. We're carrying a lot of cars. And we're ahead of 2010 already going into 11. That's where our projections are. So we're doing very – I'm very happy with that. Okay? And that's just a reflection of real good management and our staff working really hard. Another achievement is on the operational side. We have not requested any supplementals in 10 or 11. We are managing to the budget that we're given, and we are doing it very successfully. And in years and years past, that may not have always been the case. But we're given money, we manage to it, and we bring it down to zero at the end. And that's a challenge. Okay. Another achievement is early scheduling. Okay, we are getting schedules out early. On average, for the winter scheduling, which is the season for October through April, we are on average 3 months early, and the big one, May to September, we're coming out 6 months early. That is huge for us because, we say what we want about the tourists, but they provide a lot of revenue, okay? We do a lot of business with tourists in the lower 48. We do a lot of business with tourists in Europe and the Far East, and having these early schedules is really huge for us. And we need to thank the administration because they work with us, to get us the agreement on what we think we're going to have so we can get these schedules out. And I need to thank the administration of OMB for that because they do work with us, and that's the only way you'd get these out early. But we managed to the number we're given, and we've been doing that pretty successfully. So getting these schedules out early is absolutely huge, and we look at that as a big achievement because these are very complex schedules.
And I'm really excited about it because I can – when I first came in, we weren't even doing it it was just up and down.
Madam Chair, yes, we've struggled in the past. We have struggled in the past, but not the last 3 or 4 years, especially the last 2 years on the early scheduling. As I say, as far as the tourism, as far as marketing, as far as outside marketing and travel agents and whatnot, the Mile Post, the publication that comes out, they love it. That is just, they love that. Yeah. And it's just all good for us, okay?
I have one question quick. The increase in the ridership, is that, can you tell, is it from our own country, from the lower 48, or is it from other countries, or a combination of both?
Madam Chair, it's a combination. We are having some very strong summers, but we are also moving more Alaskans, and I'm going to talk about that deeper into the presentation. We know Alaskans are price sensitive. We're doing even better on the shoulder seasons with tourists, but we are moving record amount of Alaskans also, and we're doing that with round trip discounting, with targeted specials. We know Alaskans are price sensitive, and really that's why we're here, is to provide transportation. But we're doing real well in the wintertime, too. And the round-trip discounting, the driver-goes-free discounting, that's huge for us. And that's only been the last 3 or 4 years that we've developed that kind of a marketing tactic, and it works. And we're moving people, and the numbers don't lie. They show that. So, one of our achievements here, again, is let's say, for example, on this plate, customer satisfaction and on-time departures, okay? Our customer satisfaction, believe it or not, is very high. Okay, it's very high. We do a lot of surveying. We have outside companies that that are subcontracted also survey for us. We base it on reservation and ticketing, the actual terminal experience, what people experience in the terminals, and the ship experience. And it's based on a satisfied or better or above type of rating. We put it all together, and we come up with some really, really good numbers. Now, what's an interesting graphic here is the on-time departures, which, you know, really not a disaster, but as you'll see, if you look closely at this chart, from 08 through 10, it has fallen off a little bit. Now, we benchmark that on if we're more than 30 minutes late. If a boat, any sailing, and we got a lot of them, is more than 30 minutes late, then that is considered a late sailing. And what we know is a lot of this slight downward trend is as we've introduced more fast ferry service in the wintertime. These boats do struggle here in the wintertime, and I'm not going to dodge that bullet. That is true. These boats struggle, and this isn't the big steel boats that is causing this downtrend. It's more use of the fast ferries in this tough winter environment, both Lynn Canal and now also in Prince William Sound. You know, these are great boats. The customers love them, but they're not steel ships, and we need to be very careful with these boats because we're sure not going to get anybody hurt out running around in the wintertime with them. That's one thing I will not do, and we're very careful. So looking at a little downward trend, it's more fast ferry operations during the winter months. So just as an explanation. Another achievement is we are slowly but surely, and I know both bodies have asked me for years now, satellite communications. What are you doing? We started the project once a few years back. We had some difficulties with just things in general. It is satellite communications in the marine business complex. It's very complex. Broadband is very, very complex. We, in essence, stopped the original project, and we got it going on the right foot. We did an awful lot of homework. We have brought a company called Radio Holland in by bid. Radio Holland is a huge marine communications operation. I used marine Radio Holland for 30 years as a captain at sea on seagoing ships. And we are now installing satellite communications on our ships, and it's a phased tier type thing. Okay, we are installing these systems with federal funds as we get into the federal CIPs. These are, you know, $300,000 a setup. Okay, it's not state money to this point, and we've got seven of them installed now. It's been all federal money, no state money. Okay, and we are also installing the Taku and the Lakani as we speak. Both those ships are in a lengthy federal projects at in Portland. They will be installed, and we will be commissioning them as we go. The commissioning is very, very to fine-tune the systems, to commission them once the hardware is installed. You know, it's a process, but we're getting through it, okay? And what we're looking at is, number one, having 24/7, it's a phase thing. We need 24/7 communications with the ships. Right now we have the wireless bridge system. We go out of wireless range, and we've basically lost touch with the ships, okay? Number one is we're going to have the SATCOM, okay? We've got enough broadband to communicate with the ships. Okay, the second thing is we've got to be sure that we've got enough broadband as we're building our new reservation system, okay, because it's going to be a live 24 system. Some of the problem, for example, the Columbia sails from Bellingham, ship goes out of radio range. We do sell cabins on board underway. Cabins get sold underway. Once we're out of radio range, we have no way of the reservations building here on in 7 Mile even knowing whether the purser has sold a cabin. Okay, with this, the ships are going to have hands-on access to via satellite, that reservation system. That is huge, it's efficient, and we're going to make even more revenue that way because we'll know what the cabin situation is even when somebody wants to buy a cabin on board. So that's huge, okay? And I'll talk about the laptops on board here in a minute, but what we are also doing is this body has asked about vessel tracking, okay? I'm going to make a pitch for this young fellow here. This guy rebuilt our website. He literally, I don't know if everyone's been to our website, but this young man is a very talented guy. He, on our own time, as an employee of the Marine Highway System, literally himself single-handedly rebuilt our website. Hundreds of thousands of dollars for somebody to come in and do a first-class job building website. Jesse here rebuilt it. Jesse has also been tasked with the tracking part of the satellite system. And Jesse is working with one of our in-house programmers. We now have a programmer. We have one in Juneau. We have one in Ketchikan now. And what we are doing is we are integrating a tracking system, just like Alaska Airlines has got the in in-flight tracking. It's coming. I know this body has asked me, both bodies, where's the tracking? Well, it's coming, and it's going to be on our own website. It's going to be controlled by the Marine Highway System, and we're also going to use the front end of that as a marketing tool. So we're not only going to have the tracking, where's the boat going, when it's getting there, is the boat late, but anyone that's out there looking at the website, anyone that's out there looking for information about Alaska in general, the boat's going to Haines. Okay, here's a marketing presentation on Haines. Okay, we are going to control the front end ourselves on our own website, and it's also going to be a marketing tool. Okay, and that's going to be huge for us. We're also working with the state 511 and smartphone system. Okay, there is federal money through the 511 system. We have engaged with that. Jesse is working with contacts here in Juneau. So we are going forward, present more information than ever to the public. I mean, the terminals aren't always open. The reservation system is not. We don't have that crew 24/7, nights and weekends. We try to keep expanded hours in the summer. But with the vessel tracking, with the 511 system, with the smartphone system, we are going to be able to offer more information to the traveling public, even those that are just out looking around on the Marine Highway, than ever before. And that's got to do with these satellites. Now, laptops on the boat. That's broadband. We thought it was very important to be able to communicate with the ships first, have enough broadband to, as we build our new reservation system, I'm going to talk about that because that's underway. We're going to get into the real world with that here pretty quick, too. We need to have enough broadband for the communications, okay? And you pay for broadband, and broadband's not cheap, okay? We got to be sure that our tracking system's going to work for the broadband. We know the customers like to have their laptops, okay? We're gonna make sure we've got enough broadband, and then if we need more, we may have to purchase more broadband. But one of the mistakes we made the first go-around was to try to do everything at once, try to get these laptops going, yeah, and we kind of halfway going, but they really weren't working right, and it wasn't a good, reliable service. And if you're going to do something, I say we do it right, and let's get it so that if you fire the thing up, it's going to work just like it would in an airport or anywhere else. And we're looking closely at that, but we may have to purchase some more broadband. There's a lot of thought that do we really want to go that way with all these smartphones and iPhones and everything that people have? Maybe the laptop isn't the way to go. You start getting input that as society changes, is the laptop the thing, or do we want to communicate via the smartphones, which would be something different than trying to run a laptop through the satellite system? So we think it's important that the customers have access to the internet. We're just going to try to figure out how we're going to do it out there going forward. But it's on our mind. We just want to be sure we got the broadband, because I don't want to do it half-hearted. I want it to be right. Okay. Fuel efficiency systems. We have had a program now for a few years. We are installing fuel efficiency systems on our ships. I got looking into this actually quite a few years ago. It's a fact that if you're riding a 747 with Alaska Airlines, they go wheels up, and there's a throttle control system that's flying that plane for a good part of the trip. I'm a pilot myself. I'm kind of familiar with airplanes, having gone to sea for years, I got thinking, well, Jesus, something we can do. And we got investigating, and we got looking pretty closely, and we found that there are systems out there. And these are very complex systems that are satellite-driven. We've been installing these systems, once again, with federal money. We're not using any state money. Right now, we've got the Tustamina, the Aurora, the Columbia's coming this winter. It's installed. We're fine-tuning it. The Kennecott and the Matanos, because we've got one tooth. We've got five ships that are up and running, and we're fine-tuning them, okay? And we are seeing, depending upon the ship, different runs will, present a little bit more savings. The longer nonstop runs, let's say, out of Bellingham, they'll do better than, say, the Lakani running around through the villages. But as we fine-tune these systems and, installing them, getting them commissioned, and then fine-tuning them, we're seeing 12% savings, okay? We burn 10 million gallons a year, and we know what the price of fuel is. We could eventually, once we get all of them installed, minus the Latoya, because she has very good fuel efficiency anyways, and it really won't work on the two fast ferries. They just guzzle fuel no matter what. Potentially, $4 to $4.5 million of savings. But the thing is, before we start really resting on our laurels on that, we want to be sure that we've got some good hard data. We really are saving that, and we're slowly gathering that data. And what we're seeing very preliminary is this stuff works. And we've Stella Marine is the company we're using, and these folks have been incredible. The ships are monitored from their control, wherever the heck their shoreside operations are, and we get feedback reports back. Basically what it is the computer runs the ship. It synchronizes the engines. The ship leaves port. The captain basically locks in, and quite simply, got Ron Brissett back here, and he's probably saying, oh, yeah. But it's true. We lock in where we are, where we're going to go, and the computer does a lot of the engine synchronizing and controlling of the engines. And, you know, set, drift, current, wind, everything is factored into the computer. It's all satellite-driven. You know, we think it's going to be a very good thing for us. You know, I thought maybe it was smoke and mirrors at first, but it's not. We did our homework, and it's saving us money. But we want to be sure we got some really good, hard data before we start not asking maybe for the money or the money going somewhere else or whatever. So, anyways, that's another great achievement for us. Another nice thing we got is our online reservation system. Now, I don't know, maybe some of you have used it. You know, we're going to completely rebuild that as we rebuild our reservation system. If we started in 02 with no usage of the online system, that's where at home you can make reservations where you're not calling an agent up there at the reservation center. We have, through a lot of tweaking, our programmers and Jesse and our marketing staff, we've tweaked, we've adjusted the online system, and we're up to a little over 33% usage. And we think that as we start driving into a new online system with a new reservation system, you know, my staff tells me, Captain, be careful, but, you know, we're looking for maybe 40 to 45% usage, you know, and maybe more as we go, you know. So that, you know, that's being very efficient. That's an efficency. The system that we have, the reservation system, is an old mainframe system. It was basically home-built 15 years ago. People that did it here did a great job, but there are newer products out there that we can buy off the shelf and then custom design those to fit the Marine Highway system, and the online system where the customers can get online will be all part of that, and we're going to make it a lot better, and it's coming. Okay. Another achievement is marketing. I know Representative Munoz had asked about marketing. 4 or 5 years ago, Senator John Torgerson was my deputy, and he and I got talking about marketing. You know, I don't think I can quote the exact figure that we have to run the marketing department, and that would be something I'd have to defer back to Dick Leary back in June. We could get that answer. But what Senator Torgerson and I did was to secure an additional $500,000 into our budget. Okay, and something that we would get every single year. So 3 or so years ago, we did that. It allowed us the ability to bid out and get additional marketing expertise. Right now, Bradley Reed, which is a very large marketing firm in Anchorage, they're into their third year of a three-year contract. So we work very closely with them, with marketing, and I've got a very talented marketing staff. They're very creative folks, and you know, we've done a lot more now with the social media. We're out there on Facebook. We're out there on YouTube. You know, so we're doing a lot with the marketing. And to answer the question, it's an additional $500,000 besides what would normally be in our operating budgets. And I'd hate to quote that figure, but I could get that for you. Okay, we are marketing right down to being very concerned about our visual standards, about branding. We are branding the system. You look at any major company out there, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, any of them, they brand things, and we are very, very aggressive now with our branding. We want our customers to see the branded information we have and in their brain a unique experience, okay? That's what Coke does. That's what Pepsi does, a unique experience through branding. And we are doing that right down to the business cards we carry and the stuff we sell in the gift shops. Okay, it is a very creative marketing thing. Big companies do it, and we're doing it too. Okay.
Captain, it says 68 million hits in 2010. That's amazing.
Well, yeah, and let me just get to that. Yep, we of course have our website that Jesse here completely rebuilt, and we have the ability to track you know, the hits and whatnot, and we're at an all-time high of 68 million hits, okay? Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Munoz has a question.
Thank you,
yes.
Chairwoman. On the question of marketing, have you worked with ATIA at all to take advantage of that?
Yeah, and that was another thing. We do work very closely. We work with Chamber, the Visitors Bureau, ATIA. We work with the communities, Southeast and Southwest Conference. I believe over the next few weeks, my marketing manager and myself are meeting with Commissioner Bell. Okay, we are working with her. We have a meeting set with her. We need to work together with, you know, that end of things. I'm very aware of that, and we are going to meet Commissioner Bell. So yes, we do. We work with the communities. We spend a lot of time with the communities. We do cooperative marketing. We do like to have, you know, control over the cooperative marketing so that we can operate within the standards that the Marine Highway System sets for our marketing department. We would rather not just say, here's a bunch of money, go market yourself in the name of the Marine Highway. We work with them, but we try to work within parameters that, you know, our marketing strategies, fall under. We are marketing to the shoulder seasons. We're doing better and better on the front side and the back side of the summer season. And what we're doing is we're saying, look, we have a lot of, you know, capacity on the front and back side. We are marketing to the clientele that maybe could stay in Alaska longer, and we give them more of an incentive in the marketing arena as far as the shoulder seasons. And it's working, you know, because we track the shoulder seasons. Okay, so, we're pretty happy about that. As part of the electronic stuff, we put out, emails, through the electronic media. We have a system called a C newsletter. Okay, that goes out monthly, talks to millions of computers, and it talks about what's going on in the Marine Highway System. Once a year, there's one that comes out with me, a headshot of me, and we focused on safety this year. And I go to the grocery store, and oh, geez, we saw it. It's incredible, you know. You look great, you know. So, I mean, these marketing folks are really creative. They really are, and they're young, and they're creative, and it's wonderful. New service, we've already started Gustavus. Gustavus is up and running. We're going to get to Gustavus twice in the summer months, and we've started the Bellingham Express run, the express run from Bellingham, which will run the Bellingham, Ketchikan, Juneau, Yakutak, and Whittier. And that is going to be a direct contact from the lower 48 into the interior. Like Mike said, the military. We do a lot of business with the military. The military is going to love that route. Okay, people that are trying to get to the interior quickly. A lot of tourists. We bring a lot of tourists into the interior. Okay, this is going to be a very attractive route for them. They're trying to get from Bellingham into the interior quickly. You know, we do not feel we're going to steal, and we've done a lot of research into, will this work? You know, will this produce additional revenue? Will this be a good thing? Will we steal Cardiac and passenger space off the Columbia and the boats running through Southeast? And we don't think we will. We think this is extra. We see a nice revenue potential and providing a heck of a lot more service on this what we call the express run. We're marketing it, and we think we're going to be very successful with it. Somebody have a question?
Senator Huggins, do you have
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'm going to give Captain John an A-plus for enthusiasm. But I was wondering this. You're characterizing this mugshot of yourself. How many hits have we had on that?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I don't know, but there's been quite a few. I've gotten a lot of comments at the post office, the grocery store. I told him I'm getting gray, and you ought to, fix my hair so it doesn't look so gray. So anyhow, achievements, Gustavus. Okay, that's a brand new one for us. SOA and DOT. It was a combined situation as far as building it. We are going to maintain the ramps and the hydraulics. We have 17 terminals that my staff does that. We had our inaugural voyage. It was jam-packed full. Everybody had a great day. We're going to run throughout the winter on a reduced service. I believe it's once a month, and we'll be running twice a week in the summer months, Mondays and Wednesdays. Gustavus is excited. They're very, very happy, and they're glad that we're adding that to our our system. Now, I'm going to get into challenges. I don't want to be negative, but we have challenges, okay? Well, we do. And you know, vessel operations, we have to work very hard to keep, you know, our schedules uniform, our consistent. We work closely with MTAB. As I say, they help us out a lot. We spend a lot of time with the communities. We have twice a year, we, you know, schedule our teleconferences for our schedules. Our scheduler does a tremendous job almost daily with communities and sporting events, and Representative Vinoz, we've worked with you here recently about trying to accommodate things that come up, basketball tournaments. We try to cover a lot of that ahead of time as we do our seasonal scheduling teleconferences. Sometimes we don't catch them all, but, you know, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge, but we're providing a service here. You know, I mean, we do provide a service, and we work as hard as we can to try to accommodate things that come up that kind of, you know, catch us by surprise. Fast Ferry in Chenega. If we could wait to the end, I can give you a little more detail on that. There are mechanical and legal issues, okay? And I can talk. I've got to be careful on the legal issues, but I can talk about the mechanical and a little about the legal. And hopefully we do that at the end. We're trying to improve dependability. The ships are old. You know, we've had a couple problems in the last week or two. I guess what I want to say is we had a very good summer. We literally had no major breakdowns. First time in a few years. When I came aboard 7 years ago, we had very little fleet condition surveying. I have one engineering staff now that we rotate the staff through on the engineering side, but we have a very strong fleet condition survey. You know, what is the condition of the boats, really? What is it? And, you know, we get X amount of federal dollars. We put ships into our state overhauls. They go, you know, every year, but the federal overhauls, a lot of the years ago, the MO was, it's this ship's turn next, it's this one next, it's this one next. Well, you know, as things get more expensive, as federal money starts tightening up, you can't get away with that. And it's the big federal overhauls that keep these old ships running. And now we rotate them through and do the things we need to do and be very smart about doing it with our condition surveying. And, you know, the maintenance is starting to show, the ships are old, but for the most part, knock on wood, they're running. And we had a really good summer, you know, and breakdowns cost us. They just cost us in a lot of ways, okay? Challenges, revenue enhancement, you know. We try to make revenue, you know, and of course we need the summer tourists to help us do that. Once again, early schedules, you know, coming out. We try to maximize, you know, the booking potentials. Those are challenges. Another challenge as we go is how do we work going forward travel agents? We've got quite a few hundred travel agents out there, you know, 300 or 400 of them, believe it or not, okay? There are two or three major ones that actually do a lot of booking for the Marine Highway System, not including SATO, which is the military system. We work exclusively with SATO. They book for the military. And I think what you've got to look at is as the years have gone by, you know, we've gone from certain agents being commissioned agents to travel agents to what's important for the Marine Highway is as we get more capability through our reservation system, through our online system where people are doing this themselves, we need to look closely at how we work with travel agents and travel agent commissions, and need to be sure as we go forward into the future that the relationship with the travel agents is not only good for them, but to the state's best advantage. You know, and we may need travel agents going into the future using their expertise to go get people in the lower 48, to get people in Europe, to get people in Asia that, you know, we have the ability to do, but they can concentrate more travel agent expertise on that as far as commissions and whatnot. So it's a challenge, okay, because nothing stays the same as far as how you work with these outside subcontractors.
Captain, in the past, I know that some of the travel agents weren't able to come into the system and do what they wanted to do easily. With this new setup, is that going to happen in an easier situation?
We are going to, yes, we are. That's part of the checkoff on the screen as far as we build the thing. As I say, we've gone from commissioned agents having total access to now just travel agents access, but not as much maybe as they'd like, to, as we build the new system, we are going to accommodate that as best we can.
Great.
Yes. But, you know, I just want to reinforce that we need to be very smart about the agreements we have and what we really need them to be doing to help the Marine Highway System in areas that maybe where, you know, don't have as much ability or funding and whatnot as far as commissions, you know. Maybe less of an in-state commission and more of an out-state commission, you know. More of an incentive to go out and get the things that we're not, that we're driving towards, but we need more help with. So that's all. It's just a very broad statement. Our marketing staff, once again, they're young, they're creative, and, you know, we're working within the state system as far as, let me get a drink here, as far as what they like to do marketing, as far as being creative and, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but the creativity part of how they market the system. Private companies, the sky's the limit depending upon the company, but the state has got certain parameters. And, you know, and it's challenging, but the marketing staff works within those parameters. Marketing people, as I say, once again, are creative types, and this is a governmental agency that we're marketing, okay? Cost. Just want to just quickly go over cost. You know, some of the cost, 62% of the operating budget is basically buried in payroll, and those things are collectively bargained. Some of the stuff that's kind of off to the side, you know, away from the collective bargaining with the various unions is health care and on the unfunded portions of the pension plans and whatnot. You know, the market dictates, what healthcare costs are, and we don't have a whole lot of control over, you know, the unfunded, pension, type situations. But that's all part of the cost. Another big challenge is crew sizes and finding the blend of how many crew. I mean, what you got to look at is we got all 11 ships running hard as could be all summer long. You got X amount of crew. Then you got half of them because you don't have the budget to run them all in the wintertime. And, you know, you lose a lot of crew. Crew gets laid off. So you've got a fine line, i.e., do you hire what you need or more to accommodate the summertime, you know, at a cost, because that cost to of course have people aboard for those six or seven months, okay, as opposed to maybe not having enough of them aboard and paying a little extra overtime for the extras that you don't have, okay? So you're weighing the cost of having all kinds of extra people, which you're probably going to lose anyhow, against a little bit of overtime, which we call early callback or holdover. And it's a very fine line. And it's a challenge. We hire 75 to 100 new employees every year. Our passengers, and it's mostly in the passenger services realm. The deck officers, the engineering officers. That we've got challenges there. I'm not going to hide under the table on that either. We've got some challenges there, and trying to maintain a consistent workforce, especially with our deck officers, because they have pilotage, you know, and the engineering officers we can hire out of the Seattle Union halls if we don't have enough at the time. The mates, it's not so easy to do because they specifically have the pilotage for the routes, and that's a very specific thing. So there's challenges there. There's challenges in every single year hiring 75 to 100 new people. And our passenger service staff does that. It's already started already. We are already in the hiring process. Huge challenge, okay? Fuel is 21% of our costs. I mean, we burn 10 million gallons a year, and we'll talk about fuel prices in a bit, but the fuel technology, the throttle control systems, that will help us going forward.
Captain,
yes.
I know when I first came in as a legislator, the percentage of the biggest cost was the payroll. Then when the cost of fuel went up, it turned around and the biggest cost was fuel. And now the biggest cost again is payroll.
Yes, Madam Chair, it varies, and I'll talk about fuel, I think, here in a few minutes. But we see that going back up, especially the situation in Egypt and whatnot, Suez Canal. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes because we in-house do projections. I've got folks in-house that pretty good at running that kind of thing down. And but yeah, it does move around, and those are two big things that there really isn't a whole lot of control over. I mean, especially with the fuel, and then of course we collective bargaining, and that's a bargaining situation, and that is what it is. A challenge. We are continually trying to grow the online reservation system, as I talked about. We're doing well. Probably another thing that I'd like to mention really quick is insurance. Nobody thinks too much about insurance, but the Marine Highway System or DOT is our system is self-insured to $1 million. Okay, with any kind of an accident. And above $1 million, we have an insurance carrier. It's most of that's vetted through Lloyd's of London. But what I will say is, over the last few years, we've looked very closely at safety. We now have a safety officer. We have an international safety management system officer. We are trying really hard to run the ship safely, and it's like anything else. You have a bad driving record, your rates are going up, and we've maintained our rates. The rates have actually come down a little bit. What we pay for the combination of being self-insured and insured, okay? Good safety record, and yeah, those, because that's money that comes out of our budget. We're somewhere around $4.7 million for insurance out of the budget. Okay, we've held that because we're running safe, and that's really important. So it's a challenge, but it's a good thing on the other hand, because we've managed it really, really well. The fuel efficiency, once again, we've got three more ships coming. Okay, we've got the Taku being installed now in Seattle. We've got the Lakani in Seattle being installed. And that would just leave the Malaspina. We're designing that system now. So the Malaspina will be up on deck next. So, we will have eight ships here within the next year up and running and fine-tuned and having some good data on what these things are really saving us. And, hopefully when I come back and talk to you next year, we'll have some real hard data on how we're saving with the fuel. The two fast ferries, as I say, it really won't work well in the fast ferries in the Latuya. She's pretty stingy on gas anyhow. We don't worry too much about that one. So, we're moving ahead with that, and we're pretty happy with that. Fuel, as I say, you can see over the last, night, from 08 right down to 10, it's gone down. Our fuel we purchase via Opus pricing, it's an index that's out there. We have two different, indexes we run off of. We run off Anchorage Opus, we run off Seattle Opus. Okay, the bottom line is, if something is trucked in from a roadhead, it basically, for example, any refineries in the Anchorage area, we pay an Anchorage price. If fuel is barged in and that comes from Seattle, we pay a Seattle Opus, and those prices are different. There's also a handling fee in there. Okay. At last report, we think that fuel could be up somewhere around $2.90 or $3 a gallon as we drive into this year, from $2.39. So that's just something that my staff is whispering in my ear. Okay, look at $2.90 a gallon going up as we drive into this year. Challenges, we've got some older ships. Okay, the Matanuska, the Mal, the Taku, and the Tusty, those are all 1963, 64 vintage. I just wanted to include this because I'm going to dovetail into the big picture thought that we've got as far as ships going away and new ships coming in. And so I just wanted to kind of set the stage. We've got the four older mainliners, as I say, they're old. It costs more and more money to maintain them, to keep them running. We're doing that. But be sure nice to have newer tonnage and more efficient and fuel efficient and less maintenance. Then what I just did for those members of the two bodies here that may not be familiar with the system, I just kind of showed what ships are running where, and it's more of an informational piece. We look at the Matanuska. She is a Solus rated vessel. The Malaspina, she does double duty. We run her as a large high-capacity day shuttle in Lynn Canal, and then in the wintertime, because of capacity utilization, we lay the Columbia up, very expensive boat to run, and then the Mal goes back to a full 24/7 mainliner because it's just more efficient to run that way. The Taku, once again, she's a Solus vessel. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. and the Tustamina. You know, she's 1964. What I guess we need to be very aware of with the Tusty is there's no backup. We have some sort of a major problem with the Tustamina. There's nothing to back it up. About 8 months ago, we did have to bring it to Alaska Ship and Dry Dock. There wasn't the availability up in Prince William Sound to dry dock. We brought it down here to ASD. We had a crack in the bottom of the boat. We had a crack right of centerline on the keel. That's not good. Okay, this boat has seen some tough service. Okay, years and years ago, this boat cut run pretty hard. I am very careful with this boat now. We dodged a few ports here just the other day because I will not allow this boat to be out getting pounded. The weather's tough up there, and this boat's seen some cracks in the hull are not good. Okay, we repaired it. We did UT shots. We did a lot of ultrasounding. The rest of the hull looked good. May have just been a bad spot. Okay, but we had a crack, and that's not good. Okay, well, we fixed it. Rest of the hull looks okay, she's seen some tough duty, and I'm very careful with that boat now. As I say, we pick our weather windows even with that ship because I don't think that always happened in years past. I'm often asked at 30,000 feet, where do we think we're going over the near term? And when I say the near term, it's 3 to 4 years even to build a 350-foot ship. But what we see, you know, situationally is three Alaska-class ferries running the intermediate routes could replace two mainliners. And, you know, we see an eventual need for a new Tustamina, as I just talked. One thing I am doing is I am looking very closely and attempting to get a SOLAS waiver for the Columbia and the Malaspina. Okay, what we need to understand is we run to Prince Rupert. That is a foreign port. SOLAS regulations are really in place for ships that run outside of what we call the international inland boundary lines, kind of ships I ran as a big ship captain for years out in the ocean. And you're out in the ocean all alone. You're not close to land. Can't get help that quick. You got much higher standards for these ships, fire protection standards, steel standards, life-saving standards, escape standards, all kinds of things, okay? Well, what I say is Prince Rupert, although it's an international port, that port's not outside the boundary lines. It's located within our inland routes, okay? The Columbia and the Malaspina go right by Prince Rupert, staying inside the boundaries, going to Bellingham. And I am now working with the AG to try to make a case to get waivers for these two ships in their present condition to operate in and out of Rupert, which is an international port, but inside the international and inland boundaries. And working with the Department of Law, maybe a 50-50 chance of getting that. But if we were to get that, that allows us a lot more flexibility in how we juxtapose the position, the fleet itself. Gives us a lot more flexibility. Okay, so that's out there, and I'm working on it. And maybe, hopefully, we'll report back to the body next year. We will have been successful with that. So that's out there. I want to talk about engines, okay? We've got 11 ships, different engines in different conditions. Everything from the Columbia engines aren't that great to the fast ferries that really got a problem, okay? And some of the ships have been repowered, some have not. We've done major overhauls on some of the ships. But right now, we categorize the Columbia, the Aurora, and the Malaspina as beyond midlife, okay, it basically needing to be repowered, okay? And when I'm asked, what is the most important one to you, my answer is the Columbia. That's a big, high-capacity ship, generates a lot of revenue in the summertime, and, $25 million for new Columbia engines, okay? And those engines are really not in the best of shape. There's all kinds of history behind why since the 1970s when that one was built. But anyhow, those are the three. The Aurora and the Mal, not as bad as the Columbia. The Malaspina may be the first vessel that gets replaced if we build an Alaska-class ferry. So, once again, that one not as much of a concern as, for example, the Columbia.
How many engines are on the Malaspina?
Or
the Columbia?
Still. Okay. Yep. Two large diesels. Yep. Another challenge is, our existing our reservation system. It's a 15-year-old mainframe system, but we're gonna change that. It's we are building our new reservation system. It's going to be a lot more user friendly. It's going to be
you know, it'll get us up into, you know, 2011, 2012. Now, what I want to talk about is the process we've taken in building this new system, okay? The first thing we did was we brought a subcontractor in to take an outside look at the Marine Highway, okay? And we call that a business process review. They took an independent outside look at the way we do business, you know, and it's complicated. This is a big system. You know, we've got, 34-some-odd terminals. We've got the reservation system. It's complicated. You know, all the revenue and the money flows through the system to make it all work. So this company made some recommendations. We made some structural changes. We did some things to try to be, more efficient and change the way we do business, even organizationally within the org chart. So that was step one. The next thing we did was we had a document called our traffic manual. It's a manual about that thick. It's our business rules. Every company has business rules. Well, we got them, and they're complicated. And the last time this book was rewritten was 15 years ago. There was various volumes of this book everywhere. There was chicken scratching all over the book, and it was not in the best of shape. And there was a reluctance to take it on because of the complexities. Well, I took it on, okay? And we have rewritten that book. We had a lot of help from, you know, the shoreside staff, KCO, the reservations building. Our marketing team basically ramrodded the project, our marketing manager. We brought a professional writer in, and we rewrote that book, and that's done, and we've got our business rules in place. You need to have business rules before you can build a new reservation system, especially with something as complex as this. Huge victory for us. It's a control document now. No more chicken scratchings. We control it like we do our safety management system documents. Control document, because there's a lot of these documents out there. So, huge plus, and it's going to really help us as we rebuild the reservation system. We are going to bring a project manager in. Okay, to rebuild a reservation system is a huge project. We have bid that out. We have one more day to go, and as I say, staff along with this project manager from the outside that knows how to build reservation systems going to come in and help us. The money's budgeted. And we think it's a very, very intelligent way to go. Okay, we think we'll have this system up and running by September of 12. That's my goal. Just to recap, okay, we're at about $100 million in state GS subsidy. That's where it's at. Okay, X amount in revenue, but about $100 million. Okay, as far as federal aid, we're between, and it varies, between $22 and $25 million annually. That comes from federal highways, FTA, variable discretionary, and state match. Okay, that is what funds the big overhauls. We've got the Taku and the Lakani all winter in Portland in the shipyard being overhauled. That it's the federal money. It's this federal support that we get that really keeps these boats going. Okay, the next piece of this is the annual, what we call state overhauls, the state CAP overhauls, the 6 to 8 week overhauls, the fast ferries, Lantuia a little bit less, but you know, and each year varies, depending upon what we find wrong with the boats. But this is the regulatory, state overhauls, Seward or ASD Shipyard, and that runs on average between $13 and $15 million. It's just a number. It's a number. Some years are better than others. Okay. Midlife replacements, about 25 per engine. Okay, Alaska class ferry, 25 million
per engine or per vessel?
Per vessel. Sorry, good catch, Madam Chair. Alaska class ferry, we estimate, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Approximately 120 million to build one of these. A new Tustamina, about 200 million. More cabins. You had a cabin question. More money to build cabins is more money. Okay. The Alaska class ferry. Okay, I got 5 minutes. I'll go fast. Our administration and our governor supports the Alaska class ferry, the construction of. Okay, we do have $60 million ish in a fund. There was an additional 60 advanced construction road money in that fund. Okay, our administration has defederalized the backside of that $60 million. But there's a reason for that. Okay, and what the administration sees is if there is all federal money in that pot, that will allow the state a lot more flexibility with the procurement process. Procurement is a tricky thing, but it will allow a lot more flexibility, and it will also support an in-state bidder's preference. Okay, if you have any federal money, 10 cents of federal money involved in any of it. There are very strict bidding guidelines, low bidding type things, and sometimes that's not the best way to go. Sometimes it isn't the best way to go. So what we see with the defederalization is you know, the governor has supported this, and is it going to allow us more flexibility to be more creative with the procurement, and it potentially, you know, it will allow for an in-state bidder's preference. We've had another thing happen. Our governor and our administration has supported. We've completed a land transfer agreement with ADA, Alaska Development Corporation, and DOT at Ketchikan Shipyard, and it's a two-phase functional replacement, and it will in the end game allow for quite a bit more acreage. Some warehousing, some buildings to be functionally replaced between the Marine Highway System and Alaska Ketchikan Shipyard. Okay, we have purchased property in Ward Cove. We've purchased a large warehouse. We're going to consolidate our warehouses. We're starting to run out a little bit of room for admin in KCO. We're going to have room for admin. We'll be able to consolidate all of our climate-controlled warehousing, our non-climate-controlled warehousing, and there is enough uplands to eventually, the building we're in is a very old building, and maybe have a new headquarters there. So the functional replacement was supported by our governor, was supported by the administration, and it is going to allow Alaska Shipyard the ability to grow, because DOT does own land within that ADA property. Okay, and in talking with ADA and Alaska Shipyard, in the end, with Phase 1 and Phase 2 of the functional replacement. Phase 2 is the actual self-birth, the water, the birth. That will come in a different phase. You know, they feel they have the potential for up to 250 full-time jobs. So those are Alaska jobs. That's good for all of Alaska. Okay. Phase 1, we do have $3.4 million in the governor's budget. That's the authority. And that's the authority to actually spend the money. Okay. The $3.4 million will come from ADA. ADA is funding the 3-4 within the budget, within the governor's budget, is the authority to, you know, right now to spend the 3.4 as part of the functional replacement. Okay, the administration and our governor does support a competitive process. Okay, we want a competitive bidding process, but with a flexible procurement process, that puts the state at a little bit of an advantage too with this really big important project. So our administration does support competition. Okay, just a little update on where we are with the Alaska Class Ferry. Building a ship is complicated. This is a 350-foot steel ship. Okay, we have got the preliminary design done. Okay, that was a process where we've identified the size of the ship, the mission of the ship, what the ship looks like. We've got some very basic interior designs, et cetera, not detailed yet, but very basic. The speed of the ship, the kind of engines the ship will have, a lot of stuff went into that. We had a very public process. We were very transparent. Jim Beadle and I crisscrossed the state. We had public meetings. We set up a website. The website's still there. We took input onto the website. We incorporated all that into this preliminary design to be sure we had the right platform. Okay, we brought our ship crews in. We have very good ship crews, and we had a very strong steering committee. We had consultants on the steering committee. We had our shoreside engineering, and we brought our folks that run the ships. These are the folks that really do know. They're out there running these ships every day. Ron knows, and we brought what we considered our best and brightest in to help us design the platform. So that's done. That's done and completed. And we know what this ship is. We've got a real good idea, and we know what it is. And that's complex just to get to that point. Okay? We are now in what we call the functional and detailed design stage. In building a 350-foot steel ship, there is a lot of design that goes into every pipe, every wire, every toilet, everything, and that is rooms and rooms full of blueprints and designing, and we're about 10% complete with that, and we are slowly moving ahead with that. So the project hasn't stopped. It is moving ahead. If we were to say, driving ahead at full tilt, where are we to come up with a complete final design of this boat? Probably 10 to 12 more months of designing, and then to build it, depending upon what shipyard you're at, you know, another 3 years, 3 to 4 years. So it hasn't stopped. It's moving ahead. Our administration supports it. And, you know, there's probably another, you know, 10 to 12 months of real detailed designing that we need to do. And it's slowly moving ahead. So we're working to identify the procurement process. That's what we're trying to do. We are working internally to try to do that. We've got to complete the detailed design. Okay, we've got to finalize the estimated cost. I mean, we're saying $120 million. I mean, maybe it'll be less, but with the price of steel and the price of things, maybe not. But you won't get there, like any project, until you've got a real detailed design and then you get a really, really hard engineer's estimate of the real cost.
You were going to mention the staterooms?
Staterooms. You know, we went back and forth on staterooms. You know, staterooms cost money to build. You know, as far as efficiency and operating, more money to operate. And what we came to the conclusion of after the whole public process is that we would have five-ish what we call quiet rooms that would be a stateroom with a bunk. You know, whether that's a toilet facility or not can be changed. You know, handicapped accessible. And to try to find some middle ground with that. I mean, these boats are going to run on the intermediate routes, hopefully no more than 7 hours running on any one route. We are going to run these boats, hopefully, with a 24/7 crew. Okay, trying to stay within the 12-hour envelope of a pure day boat is very difficult to do on a lot of our longer routes. So you know, 4 hours, five, six, seven on the boat at the max, although the crew will be a 24/7 crew, so that, you know, on a round-trip type situation, you know, the day may be a little longer, but... You know, that's a tough one. Cabins are tough. I mean, they're expensive to build in, and it costs a lot of money to crew them accordingly. If you were to have a whole ship full of cabins, the price would go up tremendously. If we were to go and build a brand new Columbia today, probably be about $450 million, maybe $500 million. We're trying to get a platform that is economical to run, that is economical to build, and still will, you know, meet the mission as we juxtapose the position, as the situation as we grow. So we are going to have private rooms, but not a whole shipful of them. I mean, that's what we're thinking right now, to answer that question. There was a question about ADA. ADA rules have recently changed, federal rules, okay? We work very hard to stay ADA compliant. And a lot of the ADA situation is physical changes to the ships. We've done that in our federal projects over the years. We actually have consultants that help us with ADA because they're complex. Everything from you know physical makeup of the ship to signage to all kinds of things like that. The rules have changed. Okay, we've gotten a good look at the rules. We feel that we are okay with where we got to go. There seems to be a lot more customer support to ADA that we need to do. I've had multiple meetings on that. I've got a steering committee. I've got a team, and we feel pretty good that we're staying within those ADA roles. The ships mechanically, physically are okay. We've named what we call a complaint resolution officer just the other day, part of the federal rules. This person's got a lot of power to fix complaints almost on the spot if we have an ADA complaint, and we're aware of it, I'm aware of it, and we're okay with it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. If it would help if you would just be a little more excited about your...
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
Any questions or anything? Or
I think we asked them as we went along, so thank you, and because we need to get this room over to the Senate right now. But House Prep Transportation will be meeting on Thursday, and our regular meeting place in room 17, and we're going to hear three bills, non-commercial trailer registration fees, suspending motor fuel tax, and the bicycle program. So we stand adjourned at 2:34. Thank you.
Senate Transportation Committee to order. We have one resolution on the agenda before us today. It's 2:38. The members of the Transportation Committee that are here, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, Senator Kukash, we do have a quorum, 3 out of 5. I'm expecting to have one more person join us, but I'd like to ask...
One second.
I know. Well, you can make the presentation. You're the committee aide.
I can make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you join us here? Your name for the record. We do have the resolution does not have a fiscal note because it is just a resolution. And the intention is to, my intention today is to pass it out of committee this afternoon. So why don't you identify yourself with the record and go ahead and get going.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. Before you is Senate Joint Resolution 6. The resolution is urging an extension to an EIS comment period. The EIS is associated to what is called JPARC. It's a military expansion of military airspace for training. We're with the resolution. We are recognizing the importance of the aviation industry in Alaska. Its contributions to the economy of Alaska, and also the dependence upon aviation to certain Alaskan communities. The comment period originally started on December 10th, which is at the height of the holiday season. We understand that the NEPA process is the EIS is part of the NEPA process. We understand it's a long and cumbersome process, to say the least. We don't feel that the EIS was intentionally, when you start a NEPA process, we don't think that they intended for the comment period to be right at the holiday season. What we're doing with the resolution is asking for a comment period because that expansion could have such an effect on the industry, the economy, and certain villages in Alaska.
Good. Senator Olson, just for the record, I want to recognize you and ask you if you'd like to have any comments on this particular resolution, give you the opportunity.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for this opportunity. And now, once my right-hand man gets done, then I will go ahead and put it into a perspective that for those people that are going to be users, the end users, the village people like where I come from, as well as the pilots that it affects. So I'll wait till the formal portion of the sponsor statement is taken care of by my staffer. Okay. He's very capable. He will carry the brunt of it, and then I will fill in more personal parts.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, the aviation industry contributes $3.5 billion to Alaska's economy and 47,000 jobs to Alaska's economy. The 40,000 jobs represent roughly 10% of the total jobs in Alaska's economy. Some of the businesses that could be affected are commercial airlines, air taxis, fixed-based operators, the fuel distributors, air taxis. I could go on and on.
Okay.
There are two members online, or not two members, but two Alaskans involved in the aviation industry online. One is Mike Morgan. He is with Warblows Air Ventures out of Fairbanks. The other is Leif Wilson. He's out of 40 Mile Air out of Tok. They're available. I can answer any other questions regarding the resolution.
We'll give them opportunity here in a minute, but are you finished with your presentation?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Yeah, any questions for the presenter? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and have Senator Olson come to the microphone.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Donald Olson, the state senator from the Nome area, as well as the North Slope. And what has happened is that the military has gone ahead and has had a MOA in place, which is a military operations area, which is in place for jet traffic and jet training that happens at 5,000 feet above sea level, up higher to whatever, and I don't know what the upper limits are, and there may not be any upper limits for that matter. What they want to do is to go ahead and extend that MOA down to from 5,000 feet to 500 feet, mm-hmm. and this area is in the area south of Fairbanks. When you start, it's not a situation where we're trying to go ahead and do away with what's happening, because training is important. Aviation training is ultimately important, and I'm a big believer in training. But what I want to do and what this resolution does is to go ahead and extend the comment period. And most people, you know, I don't understand why anybody would be opposed to having a comment period extended for people to have the local input. But here's the reason that we need more input is because when you drop most general aviation aircraft, whether they're smaller aircraft in their Super Cubs or somebody in their Citabria or even somebody in their 206 or Navajo is going back and forth, generally they can get by with anywhere below 5,000 feet. You start getting down to 500 feet, then you're starting to deal with some pretty, even though it's not used very often during throughout the year, you're starting to inhibit some of the process that goes out there. So if you have a mail run, like many of the air taxis do, and having run mail where you've got the postal department on your back, when I was running the mail, you have a schedule, and you're trying to meet the schedule, and all of a sudden you got to worry about some of this stuff that's coming through your area at several hundred miles an hour. It's very concerning, and I think that we want to go ahead and make sure that those people that are going to be using it, those people that are going to be out there, and especially the end user out in the villages that some of these air taxis are going to, whether it's for mail service, it can be in for medevac services for that matter, but to be able to get the ability to go out and back and forth, because when the clouds come below 5,000 feet and all of a sudden you got a 500-foot level, then you're really into a stuck situation. So with that, I'm more concerned that we're able to go ahead and have the people out there that are going to be affected have their comments known, and that's what this resolution does, is urge the comment period to be extended by those powers that be that have that authority so that we can hear from the residents of Alaska, the people that are out there. And I can tell you, at 500 feet, having flown jets myself, when you're dealing with that kind of aircraft, and I got to admit, the jets I'm flying, we're a two-pilot crew, and if you're a fighter out there doing training, your hands are full, you're not going to be out there. The tendency is not to be looking for smaller aircraft that are out there, and that's where I have some grave concerns about what's going on, and so that safeguards are in place for those general aviation users, those guys that want to go hunting on the weekend, those guys that want to fly out there to their camps, so they're not unduly inhibited by some of the operations that are going on. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm open for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Olson and Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, the period opened December 10th and through May 10th, then, is that you're suggesting that it be, at least the 90 days you're suggesting, starts on February 18th? And goes 90 days past that, so it'd be a six-month period. Is that correct? A little over 6 months that we're suggesting will have been the time frame?
Actually, with all due respect, Senator Thomas, I'll have Dave Scott go ahead and answer that question.
Sure.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the 90-day number I have is May 16th from February 18th plus 90 days.
Right.
I have May 16th.
Right. You're adding 90 days starting February 18th, which makes it a total of just over 6 months from the December 10th date that the period began initially. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, if it's correct if you say we're starting from December 10th. Am I correct?
Correct. That was released for public comment December 10th, 2010, your third whereas on the first page.
Yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, you're correct. It would be a total.
We're talking about
in total.
It will end up being 6 months.
Mr. Chairman, can we just have an at ease?
Okay. Let's have an at ease.
90 days, though.
Session, Senator Thomas.
On page 2, line 21, the four villages in the state that currently cannot be accessed by air during military operations. Which ones are those?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I have those on my desk. I didn't bring them down with me. I apologize. I I can't get those to you.
And let's see if I even had anything else. I think those were the questions I had. I guess I would just make a comment that I realize you're suggesting 90-plus days or whatever added on to this situation. Of course, we had the comments from the military today that said that they weren't inclined to do that, so they're going to be saying no, you know, they don't want to do that. They already said that, and I think they were offered the opportunity to come here and state that again maybe in this situation. But I was curious if there's any willingness to maybe alter the resolution to be a shorter period of time tacked on rather than the 90, or at least from today's date, let's just say, depends on where you want to start from, to make it another 30 days added, because I know if it were me, and even if I became aware of it today, I probably wouldn't need 90 days or more to state my objections and concerns to it, and I would encourage any of the people in my area that have a concern to get right on it, because I think they're aware of what their concerns are, and it shouldn't take them long to put that in writing. But I understand we have some people that might testify, and maybe they'd be willing to comment on that as far as their ability to do that. But anyhow, that's just a suggestion to me to try and get a something that might be meaningful done that they may be able to live with or something. I don't know.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Thomas, you bring up a very good point there, and what I was unaware of what was going on there, because really out of my district, just happens to be that aviation is something I've been involved with ever since I was a little kid, and so because of that, it's one of those things that's near and dear to my heart. I brought this resolution forward because of the Aviation Advisory Board was very concerned about what was going on, and right now we've got a couple of air taxi operators that are involved with that, and they could probably answer your question better than I can. And so the suggestion from the advisory board was 90 days would give ample time for, obviously we're in a very sophisticated situation here because we have computer access and the internet. As far as the communities that are involved, as was pointed out in the resolution, those people out there probably do not have internet, and it would take a while for them to realize that you do have a longer period to go ahead and comment, and then to formulate that comment, and then get it into the respective people that are going to be making the decision.
And I can appreciate that. Thank you.
I also want to make, just for the record, comment. As chairman of the Transportation Committee, the military certainly didn't call me and tell me that they were not responding or willing to do this. I think it's really incumbent on us, since I haven't heard, and maybe you haven't heard, that we should continue to go forward, because I haven't heard anything from the military. If they want to talk to me, I'm certainly available. Senator Huggins, do you have any questions for the presenter? No?
One other comment I do have. I've talked to the three senators that are surrounding that area, four senators that are involved in surrounding that area, Senator Kuki, Senator Thomas, Senator Passman, and Senator Coghill, who's right in that area, and they are certainly in favor of extending this period of time.
Thank you. Okay, what we'll do then, is there anybody in the audience that would wish to testify? If not, we're going to go to Mike Morgan from Warblows. Mr. Morgan.
Hello, this is Michael Morgan with Warblows.
Would you give us your testimony, please? I noticed on record that you did ask to testify.
Certain, I'd love to. I guess my first comment is, being a vet myself, I totally support the military's need to do training and have airspace to do it in. I wear two different hats. One, I'm a board member of Alaska Air Carriers Association, have been for many years. I'm on the committee with Jay Park representing the air carriers. I'm also director of operations for a commuter airline called Warblows up in Fairbanks. There are several issues here that are very important to me. The first one has to do with safety. My background is also a lot of time put into the Medallion Foundation on improving safety within Alaska, and we've been doing getting a lot of success with that. And one of the proposals within this JPARC is proposal number 5. I don't know if you folks have got that in front of you, but it amounts to flying unmanned aerial vehicles between Fort Wainwright, a restricted area just south of us, and then down to another restricted area down toward Big Delta. and there are three corridors that they will be proposing to fly unmanned aerial vehicles that are not identifiable on air traffic control radar. The problem with this is that the main jet airway and civil airway for aircraft coming in from the southeast from Seattle, I've flown this route many times, and you're descending through this area on IFR flight plans. And the base of this, these corridors, they want to fly these vehicles, starts at 3,000 feet and goes up to almost 18,000 feet. So as a result, we will be flying on instruments descending through these corridors with no way at all to be warned of unmanned vehicles coming through the same civil airspace. And when I went to the JPARC meeting, I said, how are you going to be able to determine that one of your unmanned vehicles won't run into my airplane on descent or climb? And they said, well, we have spotters. And I said, well, that's not acceptable, because there's just no way they could see all the traffic, especially if there's any weather. So my proposal is that these vehicles actually could be trucked down to Army Allen Airfield, operated out of there and within their existing MOA airspace with no threat to aviation safety. So these corridors with the unmanned aerial vehicles south and east of Fairbanks are, I can see no other way to describe it other than an accident looking for a place to happen. My second issue is the MOA airspace that where we have villages included in the MOAs. The four villages are Chalkeetsuk, Circle, Central, and Eagle. And to help you explain it a little bit, when a MOA, or military operations area, is active, IFR, or instrument flight rule traffic, is not permitted. So I cannot get a clearance to fly to that village when the military has the MOA active. This in itself creates a problem, because in the recent past, last year or so, the technology within the airline business has grown to the point where we can now fly to remote villages on instrument flight rules and do an approach in and provide much better, safer traffic. One of our goals in Medallion is to get pilots out of the VFR infrastructure into the more safe and coordinated instrument flight rule infrastructure. The problem I have with expanding the MOAs, in this case, the expansions they're proposing does not affect any of those villages. What could be done, though, is one of two things. The MOAs could be adjusted somewhat to allow to this change in technology where we can safely serve our communities on instrument flight rules, or at the very least, provide us a corridor, IFR corridor, where we could fly with radar coordination with the Air Force and provide these communities. I think that is a viable option that the Air Force could entertain. As for the VFR corridors, or these unmanned vehicles, we could accommodate the vehicles flying through our airspace if they were identifiable on radar. And when I asked the Air Force if they could put transponders on these vehicles, they said no. So we're kind of at a standoff here. I'm very reluctant to accept a descent into Fairbanks, knowing that these things could be flying without being able to be advised or warned by ATC of an impending problem. I'd like to work with the Air Force. I just think we need some more time. As for the 30 to 90 day question, I think 30 would be adequate. We need to bring some of the communities into it. We need to bring some of the other air carriers in that are unaware of this. And instead of just saying, no, we don't want to do it, I think there are some compromises that could be made that should allow the Air Force to do these things.
Thank you. Excuse me.
That's basically my thought.
But I'd really like to have the testimony relate to the resolution of asking for an extension. I appreciate that there's a lot of technical data that you would have, but we really have to talk about the extension request per the resolution right now. Could I go to then? Is there any questions for the gentleman who just finished, Mike Morgan? Yes, go ahead, Senator Thomas. And I want to remind everybody that This is, we do have another committee waiting outside in the hall for us. We're supposed to give this up pretty soon, so we need to move on. Go ahead, Senator Thomas.
Just quickly then, I appreciate, Mr. Morgan, your testimony. You said you think that possibly could be, and that was what my question was, how long you figured it would take the Avionics or Aviation Association and others to actually respond, and was it your understanding that after the end of the comment period that you would not be able to send comments in and then be taken into consideration, because they, I believe I understood the military right today that they said they would. But anyhow, you may not have listened into that testimony earlier in the day.
If that was a question for me, 30 days is doable. We could make that work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Any other questions? If not, let's go to Leif Wilson from 40 Mile Air, I think it was called. Yes. Mr. Wilson.
Yes, hello. My name is Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Leif Wilson. I'm the Director of Operations here at 40 Mile Air. And I guess my concern is to make sure that we have plenty of time for everybody that wants to put in their comments. I think it's very critical from my point of view and my operation here that this is looked at carefully and any considerations are taken in advance. People have time to put in their input. Safety is a huge issue, and having operated in existing very large MOAs for the last 15 years and having had three very close calls with military aircraft, I think some additional time so that people that are going to be operating in these areas, trying to hunt in these areas, have time to put in comments and find out about it is critical. One of the things that you see there, if you start looking, is that one of the areas that they want to expand into, the MOA, the Paxson MOA specifically, goes and covers almost the entire Delta-controlled use area, which is a trophy management area for sheep. And last year, there was a red flag exercise in the existing MOAs that started August 9th. So having been involved and flown in and amongst these aircraft for the last couple of years, I realized the issues pretty dramatically in my face. And I'm hoping that there's enough time that everybody that wants to comment can comment and some consideration be given to those folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to ask your question?
No. Go ahead. Good. Yeah. If we got time here.
Yes, yes.
What would be your response to the question regarding 30 days, if that was a sufficient time to at least get your questions put together and concerns voiced and on paper and to the military?
I think 30 days is sufficient. And Mr. Chairman, and to answer your question, I've got a lot of mine done already, but I'm trying to get other people informed and active on this.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the presenter? If not, thank you, Mr. Wilson. We'll go to Jerry Rock, who's the president of Alaska Carriers Association. Are you on, Mr. Rock?
Yes, sir, I am, Mr. Chairman. I would just like for Senator Olson, as far as the timeline, yes, this was released for public comment December 10th, but the military, due to holidays and their people not being able to travel here, the meeting was not actually held until January 6th, and we were only allowed to send one participant to that meeting, which was Mr. Morgan from Warblows. But in the time since then, and us coming to Juneau last week, we have fielded, I can't tell you how many calls here in the air carrier's office over this issue, and the comments for the expansion of these areas. So we feel it's very important that we can get a time delay here so that all the groups that are involved do have time to talk, but also that we get time to talk, get our comments back to the government on how we feel we are going to be affected. You have heard something. I know we're only talking about the resolution, but we do feel that we need more time to make these comments. Like I say, that meeting happened actually January 6th, So we didn't know the full impact until after then. So we weren't given, and if we hadn't pressed for the extension from the 4th to the 18th, it would have already been done and said. So we feel we had no time, and really it was only six people that were allowed to comment on this anyways. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Rock from the members of the committee? If not, did you have something, Joe?
No.
If not, do you have anything else, Senator Olson?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this resolution. I appreciate the prompt action on it and the prompt scheduling of it. And as you can tell, it's a very important issue that's out there, mostly because of the impact and the potential impact is going to happen. If you can just imagine that four communities, when this goes into effect, even if it's 1 or 2 days or a very slight period of time, these four communities will not be able to go and have any kind of air traffic go in and out of those communities during this period of time. Many times these communities don't have any other way to get back and forth or out of there besides running on a snow machine. And so with that, I consider this a very important issue, one that needs more time to be looked at and one that needs to be taken with a lot of seriousness for those citizens that live in Chalkeetsuk, Circle, Central, and Eagle. With that, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, do you have any comment on the 30-day versus 90-day?
I have no comment on it. Preferably, we'd like to go ahead and get 90 days because we have so many people out there that are going to be directly affected by this. But as long as we have a period of time that's there, these two gentlemen that just spoke said 30 days is fine with them, and that's fine with me if we decide to go ahead and go that route as well.
Okay. We'll close public testimony. Is anybody, nobody in the audience, anybody else online? Okay, we'll close public testimony. What's the wish of the committee? Senator Thomas?
I'd suggest that if we put the 30 days in the resolution where it says 90 now, that still starts at the ending period of February 18th, which would make it, for all practical purposes, 40 days from today. So if people thought 30 was sufficient, then maybe that would be acceptable, but it's your resolution, and I understand the concerns, and they are great, and a lot were expressed this morning. So I think that, but if there is a way to at least take a step towards accommodating a little bit their schedule, I think that probably it might be helpful in their understanding of the issues as well. So,
Senator Olson?
Again, my preference is for 90 days, but I leave it to the will of the committee to go ahead and amend whatever is necessary to make it so it's palatable for everybody out there. 90 days will give the person out there in these communities, as well as the end user, many of which are unaware, as I was unaware, and I consider myself one of the insiders of the aviation community and down here in this legislative process, and I was unaware of what was going on up there. So I can imagine that those pilots, weekend warriors, or whatever else is out there, or those people that are in these communities that are going to be directly affected, are going to be even less able to respond in an appropriate manner, in the timely manner that is hopefully be seen. So with that, my preference is 90, but I accept the will of the committee.
Yeah, because of the shortness of time that we have to get this out to the military, I'd like to move this today, but Senator Thomas?
I would make a motion then to amend the resolution in line 4 to simply change the 90 days to 30 days, leaving intact the rest of it, so it actually causes a 40-day period of time from now.
Okay, there's a last page. There's also a 90-day figure, so we'd have to change that one too. The last page.
Yeah.
Okay, so your motion is to change in two places the 30 days rather than a 90-day. That's a motion. Is there an objection to you asking unanimous consent? Well, you have to, because there's only two other of us.
No objection.
Any objection? No objection to the motion. So we do have from 90 to 30 days. Is there, what is the wish of the committee on the amended resolution then? I'll need a motion. We don't have any other committee referral for this, so I'd like to move it out today.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the bill out of committee as amended.
Okay. And there's no fiscal note, so we're fine with that. Is there an objection? See no objection, then we have moved the committee resolution out. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Uh-huh. And we are adjourned. Thank you.